Hello, and welcome to episode number 16 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. This is Lisa Gonzalez with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, where I research and contribute to our website, muninetworks.org. In our 16th episode, Christopher Mitchell interviews J.D. Lester and Larry Gates of Chanute, Kansas. We just released an in-depth report on the incredible municipal network in Chanute and how the community developed this gigabit network without any borrowing or bonding. Lester, the city manager, and Gates, director of utilities, join Christopher to talk about how the network contributes to the economy and the quality of life. They discuss their future plans for this incredible asset. Here are Christopher, J.D., and Larry.
So, this is Chris Mitchell. I'm on the line with the city manager of Chanute, J.D. Lester, and the director of the utilities, Larry Gates. Thank you both for joining me on this Community Broadband Bits podcast.
Our pleasure.
I'm very excited. We're talking on the day that we're releasing a case study looking at how Chanute has been able to build a very impressive wired and wireless network. But I thought we could start by describing Chanute to people who haven't been there. What is it like on the ground?
Chanute is a rural community in southeast Kansas. It, like many communities west of the Mississippi, is a railroad town. In fact, the way that the name of Chanute came about is there were four different townships that were vying for the railroad depot that was being designed by Octave Chanute, and he convinced those townships to merge together. They named the town after him, and away you go. Octave Chanute's conceptual design was used for the Wright Brothers Flyer. It's a quaint town in southeast Kansas, a population of about 9,000, a lot of friendly people. The community of Chanute is a full-service community, and by that I mean we own an electric system and have power generation. We own the natural gas system, water, wastewater, and, of course, the fiber optics network that we're talking about here. So it's kind of in the central part of the southeast Kansas, so we like to call it the hub of southeast Kansas. It has struggled the last couple of decades with the decline in manufacturing, but we are in the process of making a comeback and deploying some of the technology that we're going to talk about in this interview is one strategy that we have in order to accomplish that.
The network is fascinating that you've built, and we devote a number of pages, and we spent a lot of time getting into it. So I know there's a lot that can be said about it, but I'm wondering if you can give us a brief overview of what you've done in Chanute to build this network, how you've gone about it.
Well, you know, we've operated a fiber optics network since about 1984, and we used it basically for our substations and our generating facilities that were in three different locations within our community. When we did an expansion on our generation in 2002, we rebuilt that fiber network. And when we did, we really used 144 fibers as a backbone connecting those facilities. And in certain locations, we put splice boxes in, thinking that we could maybe utilize this in the future. And in 2005 was when we made that a reality, and we started connecting the schools and the colleges up to our network, offering service at that point in time. And, of course, we've grown into this network as well as our customers did. As Internet becomes more popular at the schools and the educational facilities, we've had to ever increase our bandwidth. And so by doing such, you know, we've expanded out to level three. They have a regen station here. It's in our electric service territory, and so we ran fiber out to there and connected to them, and now we have a gig of internet that we're bringing into our community. We've connected several businesses to it. We believe that it wasn't the deciding factor, but it was a factor for bringing a new business into our community here recently that's going to create probably 125 jobs over the next two or three years. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of other interest in our community because of our network, and I think that we're seeing more and more of that every day. We're getting a lot of hits because of our network. They like that gig of internet.
And we're really seeing it being transpired from more channels on TV and and surfing the internet faster is really an essential utility going forward. And that was really part of the mindset as we began to expand the network out. We thought it was going to be just as important as electric was 100 years ago for economic development.
As you were describing the gig that you have, it suddenly dawned on me a question that I didn't have written down, but that needs to be discussed. And that's, when I get internet from my cable provider, they advertise it as up to speeds. And what you were doing down there is the opposite of that. And I was hoping you could explain briefly your approach to provisioning broadband for your customers.
It's not a ceiling anymore. It's a floor. So they're guaranteed whatever they're purchasing at any given time. And then after that, they can pretty much burst to whatever's available on our network.
Our strategy was, when it came to pricing, is price something out where they're going to be at a certain level where they're going to consistently use that. But above and beyond that, it's all you can eat. Because we're paying for the monthly connection and the bandwidth anyway, you might as well take what you can.
Right. I just think it's a really terrific approach. I hope that we see more communities considering it. But the idea of guaranteeing basically that your customers will get this speed and then allowing them to use whatever slack usage is in the pipe is terrific, because it allows them a lot of benefit without having to pay a lot more for it. And so it seems like an everybody wins situation for the community.
Well, and the exciting thing about having the level 3 POP point of presence close to us and being connected to it with fiber is we don't have to end at a gig. Their capacity is much greater than just a gig. I mean, with the phone call, we can go to 10 gig, and with some more electronics, they can just continue to go up. So I think we can long-term accommodate just about any need that's out there.
The network seems to have benefited from a real focus on identifying any opportunity to expand it over the years. I'm wondering if you attribute that to anything. Has there been a person or a document that's responsible for just making sure that every opportunity you have to expand your network, you've taken advantage of?
I think it's a byproduct of just good business practices. You know, any time that we can say that we can use these technologies for multiple purposes, we want to be able to leverage that, you know, from public safety to managing our utility infrastructure to education. We just had an inquiry from the hospital who's going to electronic medical technology, where people can actually view online, I'm assuming, x-rays and PET scans and CAT scans, and they're requesting 100 megs worth of broadband. So, you know, just any opportunity we can to leverage it, we want to do. In fact, we're talking right now, and with our WiMAX system, we don't just have to be focused on the community of Chanute, but the greater community. It's entirely possible that the library system in Southeast Kansas can connect other libraries besides our own by using our WiMAX system and our fiber network and bandwidth.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the wireless system. So you had some licenses available to you to build this 4G WiMAX network. Why don't you tell us who's using it and what its capacity is?
Well, you know, that was interesting, because we found out that there was all of our school districts were issued this spectrum, and it wasn't being used, it wasn't being built out, and it was all going to be lost. The FCC was going to take it back, and so we worked with our school districts and was able to obtain these licenses, start building out a WiMAX network, a 4G WiMAX network. We have a few businesses. We've been doing some beta testing on that at this point in time, seeing what the bandwidth capabilities are. And I think people are having 25 and about 10 is the speeds that they're looking at this point in time. I don't know, the radios that we installed are 100 meg radios, and we have 4 of those up in our community. So there's some other possibilities that we can use this for as we move to maybe look at smart grid within our community, because of we have water, electric, and gas meters, and we're looking at an automated meter information system to accommodate those utilities also. So NYMAX may be a possibility that we use that.
We have you provided us with an excellent map that shows the coverage of the network. It's quite a bit substantial. It's quite a bit outside of town as well, as I believe JD mentioned in the comments about it, which I think is pretty interesting, benefiting those who may live just outside of town in addition to those who live in town.
We were able to secure 4 different licenses, 1 from the community college and 3 from school districts. And based upon each channel, we were able to daisy chain those together and create more bandwidth than what one alone could have done.
And so you said that you have a couple of business clients on that. I'm wondering if we can go back in time a little bit to when you hooked up your first business client, and if you can describe the situation as to why that was necessary and the reaction of the business to being hooked into your network.
And I'm guessing it's the same with several of our customers, even on our fiber network, as well as this WiMAX that we connected them to, is because they were having issues with broadband, either couldn't get DSL at their facilities or was having another service provider. And the quality of service was not there. They were losing their internet connections to just not being able to get much bandwidth to send the packets that they were needing to send. And so we were able to connect these folks, and they have been very happy with the results of getting over onto the Cetus network. I think we're highly reliable. Anyway, we strive to be there with that.
Kind of having an electric utility mindset, we build a lot of redundancy into our infrastructure.
Well, you, as you said earlier, and I don't know if maybe people missed it, but you provide all the infrastructure in town, it sounds like.
Yeah,
so it's it would make sense that you certainly know how to provision reliable services.
Yep, we've got all the poles and right-of-ways to be able to work within, which simplifies things quite a bit for a provider.
And so you, I believe, are beginning to plan, or you have been planning, the ability to expand your network out to touch every household and business when when the financials make it feasible. Can you tell us a little bit about what you'll expect, what the benefits will be of expanding your network out to everyone?
Well, I think we see many potential benefits. What our objective is, and I know that some communities have done this successfully and others not so successfully, but what we envision is to build out a network that is an open access type network. In other words, we don't necessarily want to be the retail provider of a voice service or a video service or things of that sort. What we'd rather do is just transport IP packets, similar to the way that we might buy electric kilowatts from another generator and then transport that to the home. We see this as a very similar function. So we could see having those connections being used for utility purposes, for our purposes, and then maybe market the excess bandwidth to companies that want to provide retail services over our network.
So it would be fair to say then that although at the present time you are providing retail services to a few customers that are external to the city and the schools, that in the long term you see your role as more infrastructure-based and not focused on services.
Yeah, I see us maybe as a wholesaler of bandwidth to those connections.
That's the path for open access that seems to be making the most sense. We're seeing that work out pretty well in Danville, Virginia, and a couple of other places. So we certainly hope that that works out, because that's the only chance we really have in this country of having robust competition, I think. So we'll be thrilled to watch you trailblaze and hope that other communities are able to follow.
We don't see it any different than building streets and bridges and letting anybody drive on them that they want.
As the utilities are serving the water, the gas, and the electric, presumably there's even more benefit to you than if you were only doing electric smart meters, right?
Yes, correct.
Just out of curiosity, what can you go into that a little bit? Just because a lot of people associate the smart grid with just being about remote meter reading. Do you see additional benefits beyond that?
We have just completed a phase one study of implementing a smart grid and smart metering network. And one of the major items in there, as far as cost recovery is, as you begin to understand your loads and your infrastructure better from an electrical point of view, you can begin to size the infrastructure properly. In other words, you may have transformers out in your system that are really larger than what they need to be to meet the need and the demand. And if you can right size those, then maybe instead of losing 5% of your energy, you're losing 2%. And there are substantial savings just by being more efficient on the energy side within the utility, the electric utility. Same with water and natural gas. And by being able to take that data and provide that to the end consumer, I think they can become better consumers. I think that the way we have it set up now is they consume the utilities, and then 10 days after that, they get a bill and send it in, send the payment in, and they really don't know what they're consuming, and they don't have the chance to respond quick during situations where it's more expensive or less expensive.
Other things we'll be able to see is such as if they get a water leak, we'd be able to determine that. We're going to be able to offer a lot more services, such as prepay, to where they could prepay their bills. The customer information system is what JD was talking about. It's just a wealth of information that the customer can have in his hand, to where he could see what he's consuming or using. And, of course, as we all are here in the Midwest at this point in time in a drought, this would be a huge tool for us to use at this point in time, and also our consumers, just to see how they are doing in conserving water that they're using.
Is there anything else about the network that our viewers should understand before we sign off and encourage them to read the report?
It's a fun tool to have, and, you know, I mentioned economic development. I do think that that's going to be a critical infrastructure for just about any business. I mean, even with manufacturing businesses, they are so interconnected with their suppliers and their customers now that they've got to have that continual connection and bandwidth with them in order to manage inventories and control production. So I don't think it's a fad. I think it's a long-term way of life when it comes to business. And we think we're positioned very well to satisfy those needs as they come along.
One of the benefits I think we have for business that we didn't discuss much of is if there's a business in our community that has more than one location, they're able to actually write to servers at gig speeds, so they can not have servers in two locations. They can do it in one. They could better manage their assets that way. That has been something that's been very well liked in our community.
Oh, I'm sure the cost in my community of hooking up two offices across town with a gigabit is prohibitive. Is that something that you charge extra for? Or is that just something that comes with having two connections to the internet through you?
We have a connectivity fee of $250 at this point in time.
Per location. Other than that, once they get on, the bandwidth is theirs to go for.
That's incredible. And just for clarification, the $250 connectivity fee gets them unlimited communication between those two sites, and then there's an extra fee depending on what they want to access from the internet. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's just $250 is just nothing compared to what most of the communities in this country have to pay to do something like that. So it's a heck of a deal. We would expect nothing less from a community that has a motto of tradition of innovation, I suppose. Let's hope that some other communities can pick up on it and learn from your lessons.
Well, let us keep our competitive advantage for a little while.
Right.
I think it would be very good for communities to get serious about this kind of infrastructure, because I think it's going to be critical.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Although I think you're thinking far enough down the road that it will be hard for many communities to just up and surpass you. So congratulations. Thank you so much for sharing all the information with us in the report and on this podcast. It's been terrific learning about Chanute.
Again, that's our pleasure. Thank you.
That was Christopher talking with J.D. Lester and Larry Gates from Chanute, Kansas. You can learn more about Chanute's journey to their gigabit network in our report. Download it at muninetworks.org or at ilsr.org. The case study is also available in Kindle format. If you have any questions or comments, email us at podcast@muninetworks.org. Our handle on Twitter is @CommunityNets. This show was released on October 9th, 2012. Thanks to Fit and the Conniptions for the music licensed using Creative Commons. The song is called Spellbound.